This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Monday, Larry Richard with our Monday appointment with Lenny McAllister, who is our in-house political analyst and wears many hats. Most importantly, in education, I believe, because people who help support our teachers and students can change lives every day.
Indeed.
And they do.
Indeed.
And during these challenging times, there has not been a shortage of topics. So, before we get into some of that, I wanted to ask you about the student loan issue, because since COVID, many of the student loans were on, you know, they kept pushing back. They kind of froze, and forbearance is what it's called in the banking business, without additional tax accumulating and penalties. There were people going into all of that who were in default. Or we're in default now that we're coming out of it. And the last 2 years, there was the promise that those student loans may be forgiven by the Biden administration. Of course, those were struck down in the courts. So today, if you're in default, you've got to reach out to the government. Otherwise, the process of them coming to collect will begin.
And what's unfortunate is, We are in very challenging economic times. It's very uncertain. And the folks that are paying on these student loans are the people that are in the greatest period of time of their economic potential. You want them, yes, obviously paying back the loans. They made that promise. They need to pay it back. But you also need them buying houses, which is going to require a loan. You need them buying cars, which is going to require a loan. You may need them, depending on how old they are, to send their kids to college, which, depending on the college, will require a loan. And there needs to be a way. And again, this is goes back to the whole axiom of, you know, hatchet versus scalpel. There needs to be methodology that, one, addresses this appropriately, and two, is not punitive. One of the concerns that a lot of the folks that are paying these loans back have now in 2025 is the fact that this is going to be a punitive process, and if it's not paid back in a more rapid fashion, there's going to be consequences, including garnishment of wages. This is at a time where, and I know people were talking about how the job numbers look better than they expected, but people forget that they revised the last 2 months downward in regards to jobs added. There are more people coming up. The unemployment rate has slowly started ticking up. And at this point in time, we're going to create less jobs this year than we did last year. And the economy was the very thing that we were told by the Trump campaign was horrible in 2024. And that's why they needed a change from Democrat to Republican in the White House. And now we're seeing it be worse with tariffs and everything else. This has to be something that's adjudicated properly when it comes to people trying to pay back the student loan. So this is going to be both on the person with the loan, but also on the government and how they deal with these individuals starting today.
Imagine the emotional swing, Lenny, if the average debt for college student loans is $36,267. Imagine the swing in emotion when you were told, hey, these will be forgiven. Which I understand people who aren't for it because they don't have the loans, they paid theirs, or they don't care, or they don't want money going to pay off these loans. But if you're someone that's holding one of these, you're thinking, oh, this is a miracle. This is a chance for a reset. And that happened several times where that promise was made and then struck down. Now the reverse, where it's like, okay, now you got to pay. And if you've been, you know, in default, we're coming after you. So it's created a lot of anxiety. And some people might say, well, good, you, to your point, they should be paid back. And I agree, you should pay your loans back. However, they need to reach out today.
They have to do it today. And on top of that, Larry, this is the problem that happens politically. This level of even animosity, if you want to say, and some folks might say it's not being, you know, acrimonious with this, but this is not the same tone that people took in many instances with businesses. Now, you can say the Tea Party was against the banks and the bank paybacks in 2008, 2009, but generally speaking, when you start talking about businesses creating problems and needing help, the farmers and farming subsidies, we say, well, we have to feed Americans. And we make an excuse to give those subsidies, or we make excuses to give to other businesses. I mean, we have film subsidies here in Pennsylvania. You haven't throughout the other states throughout the country as well. But you're still talking about families. I mean, we're not talking about kids in their, you know, 26, 27 years old that are going on European vacations. We're talking about people in their mid to late 30s, early 40s that have kids that are trying to provide a home. They're already household incomes, if not three income households. And if you're not allowing them to have a chance to chase the American dream, they don't spend money, they don't invest in education, and they stop providing the type of stability you need in your neighborhoods to get us past some of the rigid problems that we have, including community violence, including bringing jobs back to a region, et cetera.
So again, if you're in default student loans today, reach out. It'll be really important to open those lines of communication so you don't end up in one of the worst situations where there's wage garnishment. All right, coming up with Lenny McAllister. Lenny, I want to ask you, we'll dial back through the weekend, the artificially generated, but it was put out on Truth Social, and then the White House official,
yes, they did,
Twitter account or X and social media accounts, Donald Trump as the Pope. I want to get your reaction because you're a Republican, you're a Catholic,
I am,
and I'm curious what you think about it, and then the reaction there has been, or not, from around the world. Next on the Big K Morning Show. It is the Big K Morning Show, and Mondays in our 8 o'clock hour, we welcome Lenny McAllister in studio. And Lenny, today 10 until 2 at Oakmont Bakery, Marty Griffin broadcasting live to thank our first responders who've had a long week as well. Some free coffee and donuts, which is a very nice gesture from Mark Sereo, the owner, and his son, Tony.
I love Oakmont Bakery. Those that have seen me around the way know that I call that my mobile office. I will go and find a bench, put out my laptop, and I will just kind of do a combination of doing my work and people watching and seeing neighbors come through, people that I've known for 40 years will come past, sit down, have a donut, have a pastry, sit down and chat. So, Good to see that we're doing something nice at the mobile office again.
Speaking of which, we were also talking about through the course of the week with people not having available Wi-Fi and power. And I noticed some of the cell towers had issues. My phone, even though I was home, was only getting one bar where it's normally four, and calls were intermittent, couldn't get text through. Would go to Dunkin' or Starbucks or Panera or some place to try to plug in. We even had Dr. Kevin Wong, our buddy who's a family physician, said some of his patients came and asked if they could just sit in the waiting room and plug into the wall for a while. So you had to do the same thing.
Through Friday afternoon. I mean, even going to a Starbucks or a Dunkin', if it's packed and everybody's on their network, they're not made to have 100 people on the network at Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks. So you get there, the line's packed around the building in the drive-thru. There's no place to park. I did a lot of work out of my car through Friday afternoon.
All right, let's talk about, they started the weekend and it really surfaced on Saturday morning, is President Donald Trump posted first on Truth Social an artificially generated photograph with him dressed as the Pope, holding up his right hand with the number one finger sign. And then it was reposted by the official White House website and social media platforms. The reaction was, still in a state of mourning for the passing of Pope Francis. A lot of people were offended by that. Now, you, as a Republican and as a Catholic, just curious, what was your first reaction?
Not surprised, not shocked. It's obviously wrong. I mean, for those that would say, do you denounce that? I mean, yeah, sure, I denounce it. But I mean, I'm not denouncing it by pounding the table and being upset and you know, rendering and, you know, ripping my robes, if you will. This is par for the course. It's unfortunate. And what I think is, among other things, one of the things that's surprising is the fact that the same group of people that took high offense to the Obama administration putting up a symbolic gesture of gay pride back when the Supreme Court ruled for the legality of gay marriage just 10 years ago, the people that said that there's no way that the American presidency should get involved in anything that deals with religion, are silent on this and saying, well, it's just a joke. After the Pope, we haven't even had the conclave yet. I think the hypocrisy when it comes to this is more stark than any type of surprise that the White House or the president or some of the president's supporters would do this. It's unfortunate, but I think that it's almost symbolic, Larry, of, do you want to focus on images that make you upset, or do you want to focus on the tariffs that were announced over the weekend? Do you want to focus on the president talking about, you know, is due process subjective? Is it optional in America? That is something that I think more Americans should focus on. Understand what we're dealing with when it comes to those type of images and focus on what really matters to Americans across our religious diversity.
Trump spent the weekend at Mar-a-Lago in Florida, his headquarters and home, and then on his way back, spent considerable time talking to the press that travels with him or greets him when he gets back to Washington. And he also did a sit-down interview with NBC's Meet the Press. What was your takeaway from that conversation?
When a president of the United States takes a constitutional oath and then says, I don't know if the constitutional oath that I took really applies to the aforementioned Constitution, that is something that we really need to pay attention to. And I think one of the things, and I do say this as a Republican, I think one of the things that's highly, highly at risk is that everything that Republicans have talked about, I mean, things that I have talked about very publicly as a Republican over the years, people will not trust the next generation of Republicans if this continues on. The Constitution, conservatism, fairness, law and order, free market principles, the protection of rule of law, being a shining city on the hill, all these things we are seeing one by one be challenged by this president and his movement. And the latest interview goes down that path when we're talking about, I don't know if I'm supposed to stand for due process. It's very, very dangerous. And it's in many regards a call to action for everyday Americans, in addition to the people in Congress that should be saying, well, wait a minute, we're here to represent the people and we stand on the shoulders of the people that wrote this Constitution and defended this Constitution.
If you criticize, it sounds like you get eliminated, which is the fear of many Republicans in Washington. They will not speak out. You don't hear anything at all, because there is a real consequence for them, because the power is to just squelch them. What about free speech, taking away the money from NPR, Voice of America, Radio Free Europe?
It's all the same, Larry, and it's the type of things that we say we stand on, and we say we defend, but we won't do. And here's something for my fellow Republicans to remember. You know, a guy that was, you know, castigated and literally told the press, "You won't have me to kick around anymore," ended up becoming president 6 years later. You can be sent out into the wilderness and still have a second political life. Reagan was rejected twice by the Republican base and became the greatest Republican president over the last 60, 70 years. So people that are afraid of harming their political futures while watching these type of attacks, this type of atypical behavior coming from the White House, need to look back on history just a little bit. And I would dare to remind them to lean on their faith in God and in America to say, let me do the right thing and hope that the opportunity to come back comes back eventually for me.
We're with Lenny McAllister. I also want to ask you about the movie industry now with a new tariff proposal or executive order coming today. He's also going to make a sports announcement at 1 o'clock today. Do you know what that is?
It's the Belichick Law from Saturday Night Live.
We thank Mark Antony and their families doing this for our first responders who many times don't get a lot of love. Just a nice little way to say thanks on a Monday morning. Larry Richard with Lenny McAllister, our resident political analyst. So, Lenny, I wanted to ask you about the movie industry. That came late in the weekend after a series of conversations and interactions between the posting of the Pope picture, the conversations on Meet the Press and the outcome of that, and then a tariff on foreign films or movies made outside the United States.
There's two things that are problematic with this. First, it's this love of executive order. Donald Trump has written more executive orders in his first 100 days than FDR did in dealing with the Great Depression. By a significant amount, FDR only did 99. Donald Trump is over 140. And this goes back to what I said before the break. You can't say that you are a constitutional conservative and then believe that executive order, which is basically an executive fiat, is the way to deal with the populace in a democratic republic, especially when this has not been the tradition of the president. That's number one. Number two, and again, I think that's going to cause reputational harm for the GOP long term if this continues on. Number two, you're starting to now see a trend where you're starting to put tariffs on services. Now, you can make the case that we have a trade deficit when it comes to goods going out of the United States, but we lead the world in exporting services, financial services, the movie industry, other services, legal services. We lead the world in that. You start putting a tariff on services where we have a surplus, you talk about having a trade war. Now it impacts all different sectors in the economy, and that can have an impact. Let's think about how many people during COVID, Larry, 5 years ago, that didn't lose their jobs because they were in the service industry and they got to work from home. Now start putting a tariff on that when they're doing international banking, when they're doing international legal services, when they're dealing with different parts of even North America, crossing a border to work with somebody in Toronto. This is a dangerous path to go down if we're going to start putting tariffs on services in addition to goods.
One of the questions that I've heard asked but not answered is separation of powers. You have, obviously, the executive branch, you have the judicial, and then you have our Congress. And the question is, for executive orders, how far can they go? Some of these are being challenged, as you know, in the court or the court system. But now there are some judges going to jail. FBI agents fired for investigating January 6th on an executive order, and so on. Removal of the DEI, any hint of it in any way, shape, or form, including holding back funding for higher education, like Harvard in this case, because they won't follow suit. What is the legality of the executive order and its reach?
Well, let's remember, too, that this weekend also started out with the courts once again giving the Trump administration a defeat. You've had the Supreme Court that's ruled against the Trump administration over the last several months. So there has been a pushback from the courts, from the highest court in the land all the way down to some of the district courts. The interesting thing about these executive orders is when Donald Trump came into office in 2017, just as he did in 2025, The Republicans controlled both the House of Representatives and the Senate. There was not really a need to have these many executive orders because they did control Congress. Now, yes, it's slower through Congress, but our form of government was basically created that way so that there was a level of care and caution in creating new laws or getting rid of new laws. What I theorize is that there's going to be somebody in Congress, in the Senate, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, that sees themselves as the 48th president of the United States. And when you start having people rise up like that, they'll start pushing back and using formal levers to pull on, to push back on this president, to kind of start getting that balance back between the three branches. You're starting to see it with the judiciary. It would be nice to see it more often from the judiciary and start seeing it from the legislative branch. Right now, you don't see that because Republicans control both, but Republicans are also falling in line with Trump. That might change once we get to midterms and people start looking to be self-preservationist. And you might also see it when you start seeing these presidential candidates for 2028 start propping up.
They're just ignoring what the judge is saying anyway. There's no adherence to the legal system. It's just slough it off. Don't pay attention to
it. But there's silence too from Congress. If you start seeing people that again see themselves as being something more in 2026, 2028, you see the judiciary speaking up, and then you see other points of pressure coming up, you will see the Trump administration, I believe, back off. I mean, part of that interview over the weekend as well was Donald Trump backing away from running for a third term. Why? Because it's polling so bad. Republicans don't even want him to do that. A lot of people are feeling this point of pain when it comes to the economic issues that we're facing. You're starting to see him roll that back. If you see pressure elsewhere, you might see a similar trend.
He did say that he wasn't, quote, interested in that right now. So that kind of deflated. But he said, yeah, they're selling Trump 28 hats, $50 a pop. But then he's talked about who may take over. Naturally, a vice president usually has a hand up, you know, on that, J.D. Vance. And then he mentioned actually a slew of other names. But we're only just beyond the first 100 days.
Exactly.
There's a lot of time to think about all of the rest of that. The practical parts are what affects people each and every day. And the first and foremost is financial for many. They want action to change the dynamic, and the promises that were made about having more money, tax cuts for people, and lower inflation. And some of these things haven't come to fruition yet.
Well, I think people define Make America Great Again as make America, make things in America in order to make America great. And what I think more Americans are realizing is, well, America was great because of the role we had in the world. And maybe we don't want to relinquish that, that America economically can be great if we figure out different trade deals that doesn't necessarily break the social order we had previously, but can be something that we can tweak in a way that allows more Americans to feel the positive impacts of what we have in place. So they may be redefining that term with policy based on the lack of result we have seen over the first 100 days.
Lenny McAllister on the Big K Morning Show. Some final words coming up in our top three stories next.
From the Goldberg, Persky & White News Desk, right now, about 20,000 Duquesne-like customers without service.
I am frustrated with a number of things. One of those is speed of restoration.
So, Mandy Steele, the state representative, talking about holding power companies accountable at a hearing in Harrisburg to be announced.
People are so frustrated. In many cases, they've never experienced power outages that have lasted this long ever in Pittsburgh. So, I'm sure there'll be some conversations about where they go from here.
Today is the last Real ID Day. PennDOT is hosting before the deadline on Wednesday. So to get one today, you can go to the Bridgeville or Beaver Falls Driver's License Centers. They're open, as they're usually not open on Mondays, but they're open today until 4:15.
This has been on the books since just after 9/11, and it got kicked down the road after COVID, and it's finally come to fruition. I don't know what's going to happen Wednesday, but TSA is saying give yourself 3 hours prior to your flight departure time.
Oh, guess what, guys? They changed the organization of the pre-check line, and
right,
and they made the security changes.
They're gearing up.
Well, guess what happened this morning?
Long lines.
Yep. Upset people, confusion, delays. Yeah.
There's no truth to the rumor they're going to begin tasing people just for in line.
Well, we've reached out to the airport spokesperson. Hopefully, we'll get some information on what's going on. 23,000 runners participating just in Sunday on the marathon site, realize that, or the half marathon event. And it was a very successful day, and the weather cooperated for the most part.
It did. Kind of danced between the raindrops. It was cool in the morning, got a little muggy later. But Mugeeta Berhanu Fiasa was the men's winner, and Jane Berakis won on the female division. I hope if I butchered their names, I apologize.
Well, at least this time you didn't harm yourself in the pronunciation.
All right. Thanks, Paul. And a final word with Lenny McAllister next.